Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard to live it, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. But I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
It's a great day at River Tree Academy. We are a private Christian school in the Lake Como community that strives to provide an environment where students can learn well, love well, work well, and lead well. We still have openings available for incoming 3rd through 5th grade students to enroll. Visit us on the web at rivertreeacademy.org to find out more and enroll today.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another segment of Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Thank you for joining us for what should be another great show. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, please click tag and share. Tell someone Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air. And tonight, we're discussing the topic, when the city supports bad cops. I repeat, tonight's topic is when the city supports bad cops. We have seen this across the country and even right here in Fort Worth, where police officers are caught physically assaulting someone or even murdering them. And they may get indicted, but later are no bail, or they may not face any charges at all. They fired former Fort Worth Police Chief Joel Fitzgerald for allegedly having words with Manny Ramirez, the POA president, backstage at a CLEAT convention. However, they tried to save bad officers like the ones we see on the Brady list. Some of these officers are charged with crimes that makes you wonder who's really minding the hen house. Sobriety's List is a list that's kept by every police department, even here in Fort Worth. The list breaks down offenses and the names of active duty police officers who have been found guilty of all types of offenses, and I'm going to break down some of those offenses just to give you an idea of just how bad this can get. I'm not going to mention the officer's name, but I will mention the offenses. This is here in Fort Worth. We have failure to disclose relevant and material information, dereliction of duty, racial profiling, disabling any data component on the police vehicle, false arrest, prisoner property, improper use of a taser, ethical standards, tampering with government records, the Axon camera, body armor that they wear, violation, sleeping on duty, tampering with or fabricating physical evidence, intoxicated on duty, burglary of a habitation, assault by contact, prisoner improper search, false report, intoxicated off duty, accidents, and we're meaning countless accidents, untruthfulness, sexual harassment, theft, official oppression, failure to make a report, excessive force, sexual conduct on duty, DWI, failure to ID, bias-based policing, search warrant, unnecessary force, theft by a public servant, threats, accidents and leaving the scene, altered an official police report. That's right here in Fort Worth. That's right here in our city. So tonight, that's what we're talking about. When the city supports bad police officers. I see a portion of my panel is here. I see Frederick Lewis and Antonio Quinn Harris are in the building. So I'm going to say good evening to you both.
Oh, good evening.
Good evening. Good evening as well. And fantastic. And I actually have Red Bull Twin on the phone as well. He couldn't get in for some reason. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you both can chime in. Good evening.
Quinn, are you there?
Yes, good evening.
How are you doing? Fine, how are you? So tonight we're talking about why the city supports bad cops. So we'll start with the two of you all. Do you all have any idea why the city would support bad police officers who have committed some of the offenses I just mentioned?
Well, in my opinion, they support them because if they don't, they'll look bad. We're dealing with a system that, of course, I mean, that is enacted upon a bad report from the jump start. We got to understand where policing came from in the first place. So it's almost like how you going to get good out of bad. It was bad intent when it was even started and thought of. So again, we're in a system that is enacted on the merit of disenfranchisement, wrongdoing, and what have you. So that's why they do what they do.
Wow. Red Bull, do you agree with that?
Yes, I agree with it wholeheartedly. The main reason is it's a such thing called a team. And everybody that has the uniform on is part of the team. Whether they win or lose, they still part of the team. So when one go down, they all go down. So it's almost like they are inclusive whether they want to be or not.
I hear you. I absolutely hear you. Mr. Willis.
There's another aspect to that as well. And I agree with what my co-panelists have intimated in that being often the root of the issue is deeper than people are willing to face, realize, deconstruct, and then reconstruct a department that really reflects a human aspect in the way the law should be enforced. But I look, too, at the fact they really don't have anything to lose. When a policeman is accused, even if he's found liable and is sued, whatever happens, that money comes from the taxpayer. That officer doesn't lose a dime. His cohorts don't lose anything in their retirement accounts. And the city actually doesn't lose anything. Whenever they want more money, they just raise more taxes. So there's never a lose situation for them, even if it's a little bit of egg on their face. Our memories are short. We move on to the next exciting thing, and they just continue policing in the same way, basically because we don't have an economic base that demands that they respect us. So it's a many-pronged issue we're dealing with here, but it's very basic. Like the first speaker said, this happens because when it was initially started, it was just basically a slave patrol.
Gotcha. You know, I mentioned in the intro that our former black police chief, Joel Fitzgerald, was fired for allegedly having words with Manny Ramirez at a fleet convention. That said, that was just having words. Nobody was assaulted. Nobody was killed, you know. And so you just wonder, based on the list of things that I just mentioned to you all, how did they possibly fire him for having words with someone that could have possibly been provoked and a setup? So how do they fire him but yet leave all these other officers on the job with some of the offenses that they are accused of or actually been proven to have done?
Well, they were looking for a reason to part ways with him, albeit he was not as, you know, spotless as our general public is led to believe. He had an incident on southwest side of Fort Worth on his watch where an officer misused his taser, arrested a mom, her daughter's juvenile daughter. He did let go, but he had originally cuffed her. And then, of course, I mentioned to you yesterday about the David Colley shooting. There was a young Hispanic man who was abused, and he had a lot of things that popped up on his watch. And he played his role. He made sure nobody got really punished for those things. But the mayor, she was not very happy with him. They were looking to replace him, and he was just not to their cut or their ilk, maybe because there were some things he just wasn't willing to do. His main issue with Ramirez was that they wouldn't let him into the Police Officers Association. They said because he was a chief, he did not qualify. And to him, that was an insult, and he didn't like it. So he had a few words with him at a convention there. But ultimately, at the end of the day, they were looking for a reason to part ways with this man, due to a lot of internal things that were going on, not just the fact that he had reported to the FBI some city databases that were accessed inappropriately.
Right, I agree. So, twins, they will have spent $500,000 by the end of this summer fighting this man over what he just mentioned, but yet these other officers are accused of all of these other things. Do you see an imbalance there?
Yes.
Well,
wow. Let me start off with that. So that $500,000 is money that's put right back into the system. And that system is the system that drives that behavior to begin with. You follow me? So once again, the city has no recall about any decisions they make. Therefore, you know, damn if they do, damn if they don't, basically. So they'd rather not. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically, you know, the way I feel about it.
Yeah.
What about you? Okay. And I'm not sure if that was Red Bull or other store. Antonio, I get them confused. Which one did
you call? Yes. I think our diction is not the same. It's hard to differentiate our voice. But go ahead. This is Red Bull.
Okay, it was Red Bull. Okay, go ahead. So
yeah,
who was that?
Well, you know, well, this, I guess like he's saying is that, you know, we are dealing with, how can I put it? The stimulus of dealing with city and people and what have you. So, again, I mean, the money is really irrelevant. It's the act itself. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, you know, you got to understand that in order for me to protect you, there has to be a threat. And so I don't want to say smoke and mirrors, but they want to be able to control, period. They can't control Fitzgerald. So they know mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. They can control the others. So they have mm-hmm. to get him out the way. Because, again, you know, and I believe that Fitzgerald was in the wake of those incidents happening, him coming in. So it was hard for him to determine and see what was going on. He had to get a feel of what was going on at that time, because when Fitzgerald first came, Twin and I walked up to him and said, "Hey, man, listen, to do your job, and we're going to make sure that you do it." And he said, "I expect for y'all to do that." He said the first thing that when he came to this, what came to here, was he saw this thing called zero tolerance, and it frightened him. So he went and he dissipated the zero tolerance, because what was the deal with zero tolerance? Again, I don't know too much about backgrounds and what have you. I don't really mm-hmm. deal with backgrounds, really, because I have one myself, but it don't make me who I am today, because, again, it is what you do right now. I don't care if you're prejudiced. Whatever is in your head, you keep it there. As long as your behavior do not reflect that which you are thinking. So, again, we're dealing with a system that don't really matter to them. It only matters to us. Why? Because we are the ones that are being disenfranchised. We're the ones that has to deal with them. They don't. They don't have to deal with them or their worry about their children, but we do. So, again, it really don't matter. Yep. The money don't matter to them. If they don't have it, they're going to find it. So it don't matter.
Yep. Can I interject here?
Uh-huh.
Okay. The rank-and-file officers were not happy with him because of some of the things that he did implement that were positive toward our community. And when we say rank-and-file, I mean most police officers in Fort Worth are Caucasian, and they don't live in the city of Fort Worth. Over 98% of Fort Worth PD do not live in this city because they consider us to be too dangerous to live around. And for their own protection, they prefer to live in Weatherford, Mineral Wells, you know, Cleburne, way out somewhere in their own little enclave where they gather. And the only time they come into this city is to crack heads and arrest people. And that's just simply the way they view this city. So when he began to turn things around and implement some changes that would be more positive in policing, it was against their old, good old boy attitude, the way they had done things in the past, and they simply were not stomaching it. They, too, had inroads with city management and city leadership, and they made it known that they were basically looking to abandon ship, leave Fort Worth en masse at some point, even as they did in Dallas, because they didn't like the direction he was going. And that was enough for old cussing Betsy, our former mayor, to start looking for reason to get rid of him.
I can believe that. You know, the problem I have with all of this is if you're going to take up for bad police officers, what is the motivation for someone who has been assaulted or, you know, violated by a police officer in any way to feel comfortable mm-hmm. with coming forward? Because in most cases, people fear retaliation. So why have they set up a system in such a way that a person is afraid to come forward even though they know the officer has done wrong? And I'll start with you, Red Bull.
Well, you know, that goes to the burning of the cross in the yard syndrome. Mm-hmm. Regardless as to how much you have against or information you have against the policeman, they still have the wherewithal, the freedom to burn the cross in your yard.
Mm-hmm.
You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have the protection because our neighbors are afraid to come out of their homes while the cross is being burnt. You follow where I'm coming from? It's just a figure of speech. It's a figure of speech, but we have to go back to the initial meaning of policing.
Mm-hmm.
So that official meaning of policing is to enforce policy. That's what the police do. They enforce policy. So through the enforcement of the policy, everyone who writes those policies have to bag up the police, point blank.
Oh, wow.
So I put it like this. If you were to ask a policeman, why did you want to become a policeman? Well, most of the time, those policemen that look like me and Twin, I don't know what everybody else looks like, that have our complexion, they would say, I wanted to protect the people, protect and serve. Well, you ask someone from Weatherford, a policeman from Weatherford or the surrounding Mineral Wells, they're going to say, I wanted to catch criminals and put criminals in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you ask them what's the definition of a criminal, they're not going to describe a Caucasian. A criminal to them is a crime animal.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how they view us. This is how they control us or how they treat us, like we're animals. This is why we always say, well, he's treating her like a dog. He's treating him like a dog, because that's exactly what it is. It's a crime animal, and we're just trying to see what type of crime this animal has committed. Now, even with that, you have to listen to the code words. You ever heard a whistle word?
Let me ask you this. Are you all listening on another device? Because there's an echo coming from you all. Someone does that.
It's an echo. It's an echo problem for me. Hold on for one second.
Okay.
Is that better?
That's better, I think. Let me see.
That's better.
That's better.
Have you ever heard a dog whistle word?
Yes.
Okay. So if you was to do something and I saw you commit a crime and I saw you and I held it over your head, I say, well, you have to pay me to keep me from revealing that to certain people. What is that called?
Blackmail.
It's called blackmail, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So in essence, blackmail is a crime.
Okay.
So if the police is pulling over somebody that's in a car, and he say, okay, I'm pulling over a black male. He's pulling over what? In his mind, he's pulling over a crime.
Mm-hmm.
You follow me? So these are whistle words, dog whistle words, that has been put in the system, and we not even know it. You don't pay attention to that.
Yeah.
So blackmail is a crime, and that's how he viewed that person that he pulls over as a crime. What type of crime or crime animal this is, I'm going to have to investigate. First of all, I want you to give me your what we call your ID. Your ID is your proof that I have authority over you.
Mm.
That's why they ask for your ID. That shows that you are property of the state. And the police work for the state. Therefore, they are the child. That's why they are the adult and you are the child. That's why they are in authority when it comes to everything after you hand them the proof that you are a Texan. And that's who they work for, Texas. You follow me?
Wow. Wow.
I'm just showing you, these are things that we overlook because we pay attention to what's going on with Botham Jean. We're paying attention to other things instead of what's going on right before us. And what's going on right before us is the mentality that has been implemented in the minds of these so-called police. To protect and serve actually means I vow to protect and serve the policies and the people that pay
are the business owners. That's who they protect and serve, not the people.
And that goes to the, that goes to the establishment of an economic power base. They're not beating Asians to death or Jews to death. They're not shooting them in the back when they give any kind of lip back talk or turn around and walk away from them. Our economic power base in our community has been stripped away, and unfortunately, until we regain that, it will be difficult to get a true handle on some of the things we have to face.
Okay.
Well, let me put it more simple than that. So when you write on your paper, you're writing in black and white, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way the system is separated. You're either black or you're white. Someone from Nigeria, if you look at the paperwork, they became a citizen, a U.S. a citizen or whatever. They have done the oath and all of that. In their paperwork, they are considered white. You follow me? Why is that? Because every person that has indigenous roots here are considered black. So we're not the minority. It's more of us than it is of them, but we are the minor, which means a person that is not old enough to make grown-up decisions. So they treat us like children.
Minority.
That's what minority means.
But I think y'all deviated from my question, which I thought was a really good question. Why would someone complain against a police officer and face retaliation, possibly, and more than likely will, if the city is not going to do anything to the bad police officer?
The reason why is because... Yes.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I answered your question. The question was the cross line. Because no one else is going to – they're going to ignore the cross. They're going to look out of their windows, and they're going to ignore the cross burning because they don't want to be singled out either. I don't want the cross to be burned in my yard the next night. You follow where I'm coming from?
Okay, well, you're right.
This is why we are afraid, because we can't get enough people to support our actions against those actions. You follow me? Those unwanted actions. Yeah. So I digress.
Go ahead. Let me interrupt on this. One of the things I wrote about in Survive Police Contact was our responsibility to report those infractions, and we really don't press that home enough. We'll go to the barbershop, complain. Policeman pulled me over, kept me 25 minutes waiting on the dog to come smell my car. They told me to go ahead and confess, show him where the drugs were. I kept telling him I didn't have any. He wouldn't believe me. I had to stand outside in the hot sun. I was sweating. It was 104 degrees, on and on and on. But we will not take the effort to go ahead and say, look, if he did that to me, he's going to do that to my son. He's going to do it to my nephew. Worse yet, he's going to do that to my sister or one of my nieces. It's my responsibility now to go downtown, let them go ahead and check my background and make sure I don't have an axe to grind and that I'm not lying, and file this report. When you file a report against a police officer as a citizen, it stays in his file indefinitely. If the officer's supervisors punish him, it only stays in that file about 3 years. And then by the civil service rules, it has to come out. And if he does it again in 4 years, they look back through his file. They can't even use that against him to say, you've done this before. So it really becomes inherent and upon each and every black citizen to do our due diligence and do our duty and not be afraid. There are some steps you can take to ensure your safety to a certain extent. But a wolf is still going to be a wolf, and you're going to be in danger whether you report him or not. Because once he knows how to talk to you and get away with it, he'll just continue to do so. I had an officer pull me over, and the officer says, I know you. I've seen you before. You've got tickets. And I said, officer, I've never had a ticket in the city of Arlington in my life. He didn't know me. He didn't know who I knew. And he, you had your telephone on. I said, no, we're in a school zone. My phone's been off since I left West Fort Worth. He said, well, you drive like you're drunk. I said, officer, it's 9 o'clock in the morning. I said, I just drove from West Fort Worth in rush hour traffic. I guarantee you, you can't do that drunk. And he just kept throwing stuff up on the wall, hoping something would stick. Finally, he backs up and calls for backup because I guess I'm being belligerent. But the whole time, my hands are clearly visible on my steering wheel. I'm sitting down. I don't even step out of my car because he was a little cop that was about 4 feet tall that jumped up on that guy's Suburban and shot him to death through the window. Ultimately, you deal with the fact it became inherent upon me to file a report and say this man was abusive. It was an illegal traffic stop, and he had no business even pulling me over. And if I don't do that, the next time the wolf gets even more brazen. These guys don't come out of the police academy ready to kill. Now, the ones who come out of the military into the police academy, yeah, they're probably ready. But most of them build their way up to doing something nefarious on that level. They'll lie on a ticket and say you were speeding when you weren't. Like my good friend Dwayne McWilliams, the officer told him, it don't matter what you say. It don't even matter what happened. The only thing that matters is that I said it happened. Now, you take this ticket and you better pay it. And I'm talking to an older deacon at our church who was just with tears in his eyes at how an officer could mistreat him in this day and time to such an extreme amount. But this officer built that little, he built that level. The next level, he goes further, and then, you know, we hear about him on the news shooting somebody. But it becomes inherent that we have to begin to report these things, hold each other accountable. In the barbershop, if I hear somebody complain about a cop, I said, you got to report this. If you don't, he's going to catch your son. You've got to get this in his file indefinitely. And hopefully one day he'll get a black supervisor who'll look through his file and say, man, this guy got a problem. He needs remedial training. He needs to be let go, or he needs something to happen with him because his attitude is completely wrong to be on the street.
Exactly.
Hmm. Yeah. Let me introduce this blue bull, this twin. You know, you asking that question is almost like the question you asked not too long ago when you asked, why do our people don't vote? Mm-hmm. Our people don't vote mainly because when they do, those who represent them don't represent them.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So they lose interest, they lose momentum and what have you, because nothing is being done. We are dealing with a system of do-nothings because they deal with what they don't do anything as well. Mm-hmm. It is our problem, and the reason that they don't do what needs to be done is because we don't hold them accountable. Remember I told you that if we need to stop dealing and expecting for city council to do what we're supposed to do?
Yep.
The same thing goes with our people getting pulled over by the police and what have you. I'm the one that tells them, oh, your people got guns, my people got guns. So however you want to handle this, I'm willing to do it. But I'm just one of so many that they pull over. So they got to deal with me a bit differently. One of the things that I was going to do when I made it to city council was make sure that all of those officers that are on the force are those who stay in this city. Because those who don't, they can do what they do to work and they run home. But boy, if I have your address, I don't think you'd be running home as fast as I can beat you there. Are you following what I'm saying? Our problem is that we don't give them no recourse. So they're not afraid. And they continue to do what they continue to do because we are afraid of them. We are afraid to make reports. Huh?
That's true. I'm agreeing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not afraid of them. See, the only reason that I can speak and do what I want to do is because I don't have nothing to lose but breath. Are you following what I'm saying? And once we understand that the only way that we can live is to die, we'll never have our freedom. So my thing is, until we start reporting, I remember looking at city council and I was looking and wondering why my side of town don't look like the other side of town. It's simply because I got potholes and all that, and my lights are out because my people don't report. They don't report, so guess what? They don't get the money to get it fixed. They don't get the money to get it fixed, but they complain about the potholes. Same thing with the police. If we don't report so that we can fix the problem, guess what? It's going to remain. So why are we continue to deal with a system that don't give us no never mind?
Are you following me?
It is
up to us to make those reports and to bring I would tell them in a heartbeat, no, you ain't finna do this. This is what you're about to do. I'd have had many run-ins with the police. Why? Because I make it my business to walk up to them. If your son or daughter being stopped by the police, I stop myself. If you didn't know or noticed, I have on Facebook, a parking post page where I expect for you to park when you see anybody approached by the police or you're approached by the police and you videotape and you go live so that you can ensure that person is going to be treated and both of them make it home or where they're going safely. So again, until we start reacting and acting as though we really want them to get off our backs, they're going to continue to suppress us and put their foot and their knees on our necks and kill us. Are you following what I'm saying? So it's really our fault, our problem, because it don't make no never mind the deal.
I agree. Attorney Leon Reed has joined us. We're going to go to a commercial, and then we're going to go back and chime in with Attorney Reed.
It's a great day at River Tree Academy. We are a private Christian school in the Lake Como community that strives to provide an environment where students can learn well, love well, work well, and lead well. We still have openings available for incoming 3rd through 5th grade students to enroll. Visit us on the web at rivertreeacademy.org to find out more and enroll today.
Good evening, Attorney Reed. How are you?
Good evening. I'm well. Thank you. How are you?
Good. We're just talking about why does the city support bad police officers? We just want to understand why we don't file more paper on them when we see them misbehaving.
Well, that's one thing that I've always pushed is basically filing reports and complaints against police officers. I've always advocated for that. When I go out and I speak to various groups, and particularly children, young adults, and their parents, I tell them, you're not in position to argue with a police officer on the side of the road. Your goal is to get home alive and safely. Don't get to hollering that you know the law and this and that, because there are 9 Supreme Court justices and they disagree on what the law is. And so your best goal, your goal is to get home alive and then file a complaint against that officer if you believe that officer treated you without respect or violated the law in any shape, form, or fashion. But the police department's officer association make it so difficult because citizens are not only expected to know what's in the POA's handbooks, you know, because their handbooks bypass Chapter 143 of the government code. You may think, okay, well, all I have to do is file a complaint that's written and notarized, and I'm good to go. But because of the collective bargaining agreement with Fort Worth, they may have some additional steps that you may have to do in addition to what's in the state law. And that just makes it that much more difficult for citizens to file reports. But, yes, put paperwork in their lives, because if an officer has 50 or 60 complaints, legally speaking, that's notice. And so when complaint 51 comes and that officer does something out of pocket and kills someone, the city will have known that y'all have had enough smoke on this officer to put out that fire and get rid of him a long time ago. But because you didn't, now it's check-cutting time, you know. And so that's why it's important, put paperwork and these officers' lives, because even if you're wrong in your initial assessment, if an officer gets 40 complaints and none of them end up that they find merit, well, one, stuff is going to be a little bit funny. You mean tell me out of 40 complaints, y'all didn't think that one of them was out of order? But even still, when you get 40 complaints, that officer is going to say, I need to chill because I don't want 40 complaints inside of 1 year on my history as a cop. I'm going to be passed up for promotion. The city's going to be kind of putting caution flags on you. Why am I promoting this guy who's had 40 complaints versus this guy over here who's had none, and they're working similar beats in similar populations? So, yes, we need to absolutely report stuff, and I don't, you know, as far as the city of Fort Worth goes, you know, they try to say, well, you can file your complaint online and click this form, and but a lot of that doesn't necessarily comport with the Police Officer Association requirements. Hmm. And so why are you asking someone to file a report online or on the phone, call us? No, calling you isn't something that's in the POA's handbook or collective bargaining agreement that will lead towards action. When that phone hangs up, your complaint may have hung up just with it. So the stuff should always be in writing. They're going to have you have it notarized, and you have to have it filed within a certain time frame. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, that officer won't be called to the carpet on it. But again, it all goes back to reporting. We should absolutely be pushing that in every corner of every community in Fort Worth.
And, y'all, I'm going to piggyback off what he said. If you're going to file a complaint with IED, you need to do it within the first 6 months. If you're going to file it with the Office of the Police Oversight Monitor, you have 12 months. So I last week filed a complaint, and it was older than a year. But I realized it still needed to go in this officer's file because he's a dirty cop. But one thing I realized, y'all, do due diligence in making sure everybody knows what's going on. And that's Kim Neal's office, the Office of Police Oversight Monitor, IED. Make sure his supervisor knows. Make sure the commander knows. Make sure your city council person knows. Don't leave them any window to say they didn't know something was wrong with this police officer. And I'm going to give you all my story very briefly so you understand how crooked the system is. My MPO has been harassing me for a minute, but I'm gonna put you on the game tonight. Don't ever report anything you can't prove. Because then Fort Worth has a little trick they play. You got to be crazy if you're reporting something you can't prove. So I learned that this week. Only report what you could prove. So last week, I went and reported what I could prove on my MPO. And that's the fact that he's falsified multiple police reports. Give you an example of one. He changes the facts and creates his own narrative. And instead of filing a police report, he downgrades it to information only report. So what I reported to him was in 2017, in the month of July, that's the summer, y'all, I moved out of my house and basically paid the balance on the water bill to a zero balance, closed the account, and told the water department to put a lock on the meter. Between the time of December 2017 and April of 2018, someone had cut the lock off the box, the water meter box, and ran up a $631 water bill. So that's 4 months after the water was cut off and the lock was put on there that someone cut it off and ran up this water bill. Now, these are things that I explained to this MPO. I told him to check with the water department to verify everything that I said. Instead of doing that, Officer Chavez, number 4053, Michael Chavez, wrote in his report that this was about miscommunication about when to cut the water off and that it was about a possible water leak. All lies. All lies, it could all be documented. And I went to the police oversight monitor with that complaint and others, filed a report, and literally, and I'm just going to tell y'all what happened. And you know what? I hate to call this person out, but this is what happened. So you know, and it doesn't happen to you. I spoke with a young man in the office, and then Catherine Huckabee entered the conversation. Catherine Huckabee handed me a green sticky, and what was on there was Francis, no title, just Francis, and a 972 number. I was told that that was his supervisor. Well, I was so busy that afternoon, I did not get a chance to make the call. The following day, I made the call, and basically in the middle of me dialing this person, they text me something that didn't make sense. I respond back, I don't understand. Then I call, nobody answers the phone. I try again, nobody answers the phone. So then I email Catherine Huckabee, and I said, by the way, what's the title to this Francis person? Is this a lieutenant, a sergeant, a corporal? What is their title? And if they are a member, a ranking member of the Fort Worth Police Department, why do they have a 972 number? Needless to say, Catherine Huckabee never answered that question. Instead, she referred me to his supervisor, who was Emily Howard. But she never said who Francis was. So then I emailed my council person and my mayor pro tem and involved them in the conversation. And I would only find out later that my council person, Chris Nettles' assistant, Sally Matson, puts on there, Carrie, we don't know how you got the green sticky. We don't know who that number is from. Excuse me? Catherine Huckabee handed it to me in front of another member of their staff, Nathan Benson. So how do you then say you don't know how I got the green sticky and nobody seems to know who that person is? So my point to my story is do due diligence. Follow through on everything. Get a copy of everything. CC everybody. Get the email of everybody and CC everybody on a complaint. And absolutely put paper on them. I then contacted, I went to the city council on Tuesday night, filed my complaint before the city council, and then I was told by Mayor Pro Tem to talk to Fernando Costa, the assistant city manager. The assistant city manager responded back to my email, we appreciate your comment, but this police officer has gotten several letters this week about what a great job he's doing. So does that say that the Fort Worth Police Department is going to dismiss, be totally dismissive about the fact he falsified police reports just because he got some of his friends to write letters? So do you all see how the imbalance is with this particular police department and city? That's scary to me. So I was trolled after that by Dan Haas, who's the VP of the Central Meadowbrook Neighborhood Association. Mr. Haas told me, you know what? You got up in front of the city council and what you said didn't make any sense. And I'm a janitor from way back when. And what you said about that water just doesn't make sense to me. And then I was followed by Cindy Boland, who's the lady who went to Austin to get them to get police officers to have training about how to deal with canines, because her dog was shot and killed by a Fort Worth police officer. So you see how that goes? So basically, our assistant city manager, Fernando Costa, tells me because these two people, I'm going to assume, exercise white privilege, said that this Mexican or Hispanic NPO is a good officer. So therefore, everything you said can be totally wiped away. It doesn't make sense. We don't agree with you. So therefore, your claim should be dismissed. Does anybody get what I'm saying? How crazy this city is and the way they're doing business makes no sense. I mean, Attorney Reed, I was shocked.
Well, I'm shocked to hear that when a citizen calls to say I have a complaint, that the city's representative, sir, well, this person has received a bunch of letters saying, well, that may be the case with other people, but I'm telling you, I still have a complaint. And your complaint should have been investigated and reviewed the fact that he started talking or singing the accolades of that officer is disturbing to me, because it does tell a citizen, it implies that I am about to defend this officer. If I have a complaint, I don't need you telling me, well, he was Officer of the Year. I don't care if he was Officer of the Year. That Officer of the Year may have just done something to violate a child. But you can't allow him to hide behind, well, he's Officer of the Year. You need to investigate what I just stated. And so that's what's most disturbing to me, is that when a citizen is filing a complaint, to have another city official start singing the accolades of that officer, that is really, one, a slap in the face to the citizen, who, already knowing that you're likely to face a blue shield by standing up and stepping out and having the courage and taking the time out of your day and out of your life to file the complaint, they just reinforced by those kind of statements and actions that they are there to, first of all, protect the officer and the city, instead of actually looking into the actual complaint, which would really be the most appropriate thing to do if you're really trying to protect the city citizens, and the city's assets. Don't ignore what the citizen said. Look into it to make sure that you know, investigate what happened, because if the officer did do it and you ignored it, you're going to be opening up the city coffers even the more. So that's what really stood out to me and most really disappointed me, and that in all of the trolling and stuff like that, that's belittling and demeaning, and it shouldn't be taking place with city employees when it comes to citizens filing complaints against police. That's just bad. That's just really saddening to hear.
The city is in crisis, and I did a show on that a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if anybody's paying attention, but the city's on fire. I mean, Alicia Keys said New York was on fire. No, this city is on fire, because everything about it says that we're about to implode from the inside. I mean, they're literally tearing this place down from the inside. I mean, you cannot address your citizens in the proper manner and expect things to go well. First of all, it says that if the city doesn't respect the people, you got to get some new leadership. It says that if the city doesn't respect the people, then you got to change everything downtown until they figure out that they got to respect the citizens. Antonio Twin, you ran, you know, against some of the same people that are in leadership right now. Do you see a problem with what we're seeing downtown right now? Did I lose Twin? Okay, some kind of – Antonio Twin, I still see your line is open. Okay, some kind of way we have lost them. I'm not sure.
Yep,
close
I'm here.
Okay. You ran against some of the same people that are downtown right now. Do you see a problem with how the city is being run?
Well, again, you know, if we don't get involved, then we can't complain.
Yeah.
I can't see what's wrong if we don't address what's wrong. In other words, if we don't say what's ailing us, or if you go to the doctor and you don't tell them where it hurts, who's going to fix the problem?
Mm.
So I don't know what we mean about the city's on fire, because, again, it's been on fire. You just paying attention to the flame, because it's been the way that it is. We are still in the same position because we don't, again, make them do what is necessary for the survival, the life and lifestyle of us. So again, I don't. When we talk about, even with the police, we're speaking about them. How the transparency is not there. I remember trying to get a police report so that I can go about doing my due diligence and what have you when they violated my so-called rights, my person. They didn't have no cameras, or they said this and that. And again, this is another reason why I ran for city council, because I want to be in a position where I can act on the disenfranchisement and change some things for those who don't have the wherewithal, the information, or the guts or whatever to act themselves. So again, until we say that it hurts, and we go to the doctor, and we deal with the medication, or start healing our wounds, it's not on fire. It's been burning, and you know what have you? It's still the same. We are the ones, we are the ashes.
Wow.
We're the ones getting burned. You know, so this. I just can't, from both points of view, if you don't ask, you know, a closed mouth don't get fed. If we treat you a certain way and you don't holler or you don't scream, then we think we're doing the right thing to you. You know, who is to determine what's pain and what's pleasure? When it's been like that all this time. It's just the way that things go. An officer came up to me. What the deal was, this guy wanted to identify me. He wanted to know exactly where I stayed or whatever. He was dealing with car. I was selling cars or whatever. And he said, man, I don't even know where you stay. Well, anyways, it got to a point where I said, well, we'll just call the police. And what I'll do, I get them to identify me, give you my license, so you write my license down, more or less make sure that it's authenticated. Well, what they end up doing was taking my license and trying to run my license. I said, oh, no, sir, you can't run my license. I said, I already told you what I want you to do. This young man want to know where I live and what have you, and I want him to know that I'm real. I don't have nothing to hide or what have you, because he feel like, oh, you can get a certain license or you can – well, I don't know, whatever he was thinking. But, again, I told a young man, don't challenge me because you'll never win. I don't care what arena it's in, if it's in the streets, in the courts, or whatever it may be, you can't outdo me. But anyway, so the officer want to run my license. I said, no, sir, you can't run my license. I jacked the license out of his hand. So he's like, well, sir, I can't. I got to run your license. I know you don't. No, you don't. He said, yes, I do. I said, no. I said, so the other officers came over, and it was about five of them, and said, well, this is what we do. This is like protocol. I said, no, this ain't what you do. He said, well, what if you had someone or your family member was assaulted or whatever? Wouldn't you want them to get caught? I said, yeah, you go catch them, whoever did it. He said, well, we do this, you know, just in case that, you know, you have warrants or whatever and all this old stuff. I said, so you calling me a suspect? No, I'm not calling you a suspect. Yes, you are. So they believe that they are in the right, but you don't have the right to run my license. I didn't give you the permission to run my license. I don't care what your protocol is. It's not the law. So, again, if we don't know no better, then we don't do better. And if we don't challenge them, I don't know who what you call it is. If we don't challenge them, regardless to where we are in life, if we don't challenge them, then they're gonna continue to do that which they do because they never learned their lessons. I held court right then and there, and I showed them how they are just as prejudiced against me as I can be to them. Because I said, you look like the guy that killed George Floyd. He said, well, no, I'm not. I said, you dress like him. You look just like him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not the one that did it. Well, I'm not the one that you're looking for. And you can't run my license. So, again, if we don't challenge them, regardless if they have their gun on their sides, because if you ain't willing to die for your rights, man, or for the rights of your people, then that's not going to happen. So this is why, again, it continued to happen because it's not enough of us like me.
Wow. Listen, I'm going to go to a commercial, but I want, when we come back, Mr. Lewis told me a story that gave me chills about a shooting that took place right here in Fort Worth, Texas, by a Fort Worth police officer. So y'all just get ready to be like really like, I don't know. I can't even tell you what emotion I felt when he told the story. So we're going to hear from Mr. Lewis as he tells us about this story that I can't even believe happened right here in Fort Worth. So as soon as we come back from this ad, he's going to tell us about what happened.
It's a great day at River Tree Academy. We are a private Christian school in the Lake Como community that strives to provide an environment where students can learn well, love well, work well, and lead well. We still have openings available for incoming 3rd through 5th grade students to enroll. Visit us on the web at rivertreeacademy.org to find out more and enroll today.
Roger, tell them what you told me about that shooting.
All right, this shooting happened back in July 2016. The young man's name was David Polly. He's passed on now as of February of this year.
Mm-hmm.
This went was a police call that went out on the radio that someone with no shirt on had robbed someone of a pair of tennis shoes they were trying to sell at gunpoint. The officers mm-hmm. who responded were two off-duty policemen, one sheriff's deputy, one Fort Worth policeman. They were working security at an apartment complex off Las Vegas Trail. They jumped into their patrol unit and sped around looking for him, and they ran up on a parking lot. It was like, I think, 1 in the morning. I may be wrong on the time, but it was definitely after midnight, and there were several people milling about in the parking lot, and they saw David Colley. They jumped out, drew their weapons, put the spotlight and flashlight on him, and told him to stop. But with all the people in the lot, he took a couple of more steps. And then he noticed they were talking to him. And in the video, you see him stop and put his hands in front of him. Officers were separated. I'm looking at the still of that particular video. They have been about, 15 feet between them. Sheriff's deputy is holding his flashlight on David Colley. Fourth policeman has his gun out pointed at him. And David acknowledges the sheriff's deputy. He sticks his hands out in front of him since he was sideways. He didn't turn and face him. He stuck his hands out in front of him, not toward them, so they could see he had nothing in his hands. When he did so, Fort Worth officer shot him in the back 8 times. David went down. He was paralyzed. They brought him to the hospital where I worked at the time in the ER, and he was cuffed to the bed. They, of course, rushed him off to emergency surgery, kept him cuffed to the bed for 3 months. And our district attorney, after 3 months, finally reviewed the video and called the hospital and demanded they take the cuffs off the young man. And I have this through secondhand information, but the statement was that the only person in the video who committed a crime was the policeman. Well, the policeman, of course, said he lunged at them. I'm looking right now. There's 35 feet between him and the policeman. And even if he did have an edged weapon, the long jump record for the whole world is less than 25 feet. Jordan couldn't have jumped that far without a running start and had to jump a couple of times to get to him. But still, he was shot. They found a box cutter some 10 feet away and tried to claim that's what he had, when in fact that was not true at all, didn't have his fingerprints on it. And as it went, David was paralyzed from the waist down for the rest of his life. The officer who did the shooting not only was not ever identified publicly, but after a little bit of an upheaval and about 3 months after the DA found out about this, they went back, reinvestigated the crime scene 3 months later, and the chief of police at that time, our friend, chief, the black chief, his name just slipped away from me. He said David did not follow instructions fast enough. When you play the video, there's no way in the world he did not comply with what the officer said, and he ended up dying in a nursing home out in Grand Prairie the last time, because I was trying to get him a handicap accessible van, but he did not have a license, so the guy who was giving the van away, nonprofit, couldn't give it to him. But I was trying to do some things to assist him. I did write a letter to the Justice Department, have not heard back from them, and said this was a clear civil rights violation, and they need to investigate.
when the Justice Department was quite honest with me, they said the district attorneys in Texas have a great deal of power, and they decide what information to give the grand jury. And they can voluntarily withhold information legally that would sway that grand jury. And if they choose not to tell them the whole story or let them see the video or anything of that nature, then they don't have to do it. And they can sway that grand jury into no billing an officer and getting that officer out of trouble when, in fact, he should have been indicted, prosecuted, and jailed. But this is just one of the situations that I've come across. Go ahead.
If you will, I want to clarify a few things. First of all, that officer was identified. His name was Hugo Barron. He was actually on the police department's powerlifting team. And factually, because, and I can tell you this because I know Nathero Washington, who was the attorney representing David Colley. And in 30 seconds, David Colley went from walking to a wheelchair. The background on it, two men had met up with a guy from, you know, to do a little Facebook marketplace or Craigslist exchange over some George. The two guys robbed the guy and just took his stuff. But these guys were 6'1" with froze. David Colley was 5'5" with a fade. And looked nothing like what was in the description. Carrie, I've just sent you a link that actually has the video in it, and you'll see that when Hugo and the female sheriff's department deputy had a police officer and a sheriff deputy working together, that you'll see that the car is still shaking by the time, because he pulled up, hit the brakes, and you can see it on the dash cam, that when they pulled up on David, David was, does what anybody else in the neighborhood do, cop roll up, my name Bennett, I ain't in it, I'm about to turn and walk away, but it was one shot that severed his spine. And that's why he went from walking to a wheelchair in less than 30 seconds, and you'll see it as soon as you pull up that video. He is correct in that they tried to say he had a weapon. He had a box. The sheriff's deputy never reached for a weapon, never said she saw a weapon. And this is the female who was on the passenger side versus Hugo Barron, the driver in the Fort Worth Police Department officer who's on the powerlifting team. He runs out. He fears for his life. And again, someone who doesn't even meet the description is shot in less than 30 seconds of pulling up, and there was nothing in his pockets. They handcuffed him. He was handcuffed to the bed, and speaking with his attorney, he had communicated to me that, you know, that David felt such so low. And it was such an irony that they had his feet handcuffed to the bed when he couldn't even move his legs. And he's sitting there looking at his legs and his feet and trying to move his feet. And he sees them there handcuffed to the bed, and he can't even move them when he had nothing, had committed no crime. And that was certainly a sad situation because that literally changed David Colley's life. He had to be wheelchaired everywhere, colostomy bag, the whole nine, and he died at 38 years old. And it had a lot to do with his depressive state because his life had been turned upside down. And at this point, you know, I believe the limitations period may have run on an ag assault. So now that officer cannot even be charged, but his name is Hugo Barron. Because Nathero was able to get that information when he filed a public information request, and he had a big press conference and released that video and stuff, which didn't please the DA's office at the time. There was they thought that he should not have been able to get that information. But they eventually did dismiss the case of, you know, they tried to get him with assault of a public servant, some nonsensical stuff. But I've sent you that video. You'll be able to look at that video. And again, in the first 30 seconds, you'll see them pull up the car. You can tell when he puts the car in park because the car is still kind of lurching back and forward after being stopped so quickly. You'll see him turn and like, hey, he ain't got no shirt on. The only thing that he did, because he didn't have a belt on, was reached down to kind of pull his pants up and got shot in the back, and the female officer who was standing on the right side of the car is in just as much shock as David Colley was to have gotten shot. And that is a particularly sad story. I met Mr. Colley, actually had to help lift him into the car before. And that's something that Thurl Washington has been fighting with the city of Fort Worth for a long time. He has a whole list of encounters with police officers from the city of Fort Worth that the police department and the city refused to pay the folk because of qualified immunity. And that was always, that has always been the city of Fort Worth's fallback, qualified immunity. Let me tell you something interesting. If you'll remember Gregory Adams, who was the gentleman who was shot in the arm with the barbecue tongs, he was shot by an officer named Courtney Johnson. And, of course, they went to trial, and there was a mistrial. And so after the mistrial, the DA's office didn't choose to retry it. And so here's what ended up happening. He ended up resigning from the Fort Worth Police Department, but Tarrant County records show that this police officer went down, changed his name to Corey Johnson, and is now a police officer at another municipality in this county.
Oh,
and
wow.
This was brought to my attention because he tried to file a charge against someone, and he was the lead officer, and another attorney had recognized it and realized what was going on and had to let the district attorney's office know that, hey, you were sponsoring as a witness someone you tried to prosecute and believed had committed a felony. You tried to prosecute this man. And so the district attorney at that time, they realized what was going on, and so they stopped using him as one of the main officers on the case and started using someone else. But he shouldn't be a cop anywhere in Tarrant County, because any case that he arrests someone on, the DA's office believes you are a felon. And why would they sponsor? But this officer literally changed his name. And so this only came to my attention this past week. I looked it up myself. I verified it for myself because I have access to, and anybody can. I can show you how to do it tonight, Carrie, and look and show you the records. But this, it just baffles me how an officer just changed his name
And
continues to be a cop. So I'm going to check with TCOL, which is the Texas Commission of Law Enforcement, to see, okay, or are you putting his records, his certifications under the same name? And one of the provisions for requesting a name change is that you're not doing it to hide something. And so the judge may not have known who he was at the time the judge signed the order, but he literally changed his name and is now still working in Tarrant County, a different municipality, as a police officer. That's what they call gypsy cop. Go ahead.
Okay. Back to David Colley issue. The night that happened, I was on duty, and a Fort Worth SWAT member, as well as several Fort Worth police officers, walking down the hall and were cracking jokes that David Colley bought a knife to a gunfight, which is a longstanding gun advocate joke that, you know, you don't bring a knife to a gunfight. And it was Corp was that he'll never do that again. I immediately confronted them and said, there's no black man in America in his right mind who would run at two policemen with their guns already drawn. I didn't know it was only one with the gun drawn, but look at the video now. I see sheriff's deputy is holding up a flashlight with her left hand, and her right hand is not holding a gun. But they wanted to argue the point with me, and ultimately we just parted ways. They were angry, didn't speak to me, I guess, for close to a year and a half, maybe 2 years. But I had to let them know that story was not going to wash, and sure enough, it did not stand up. But it speaks to a worse issue, is that when a cop shoots a suspect, a black suspect, policemen openly joke, laugh, and cajole about it and are happy about it, and some of the foolish nurses that worked in that building joined right in with them. And nonetheless, I'm against the whole crowd, but, hey, I'm not scared to be the spear tip. And ultimately what that speaks to is a mentality in the Fort Worth Police Department and many police departments where we don't have the right hiring tools in place. The committees that review police actions and subpoena them or whatever, whether they have the power or not, that's after they've done something wrong. We've got to get on top of who we're hiring, why we're hiring this particular mentality, and there are tests that can demonstrate the psychological profiles of who these guys are. But we ignore that because we want justice for whoever got hurt. I'm trying to keep this from happening so we never need to prosecute or pursue why this officer did something. We got to start hiring better cops. In order to be on the forward SWAT team, you have to already pretty much have a military background where you've dropped a hammer and taken human life. And that they'll go ahead and take a policeman's application, but if he has not already been in a situation where he's done this in the military, 9 times out of 100, he's not going to get a call to join SWAT. And these guys are not ready for the streets. They're ready for some psychological help and assistance, but we don't have the right mechanisms in place to ensure who we're hiring.
Oh, this is Carrie. Y'all, listen, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk What Works. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Listen, if you have a question or a comment, and I see some callers already on the line, get on the phone lines at 515-605-9321, then press 1. That's 515-605-9321, then press 1. If you're listening via the Internet, the number is at the top of your screen. We're going to go to area code 682-702. You've been holding a while. Good evening. Thank you for holding. You're on Let's Talk What Works. 682-702.
Hello?
Hello.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Oh, okay. Hi, everybody. This is Rebecca Delosiewicz. Thank you for having me on. I've been listening to the program, and it's actually very hard to come on after that story because shivers, tears, because I can't imagine having my feet handcuffed and then being shot in the back and not doing anything. It's devastating. I'm calling in because I've been trying to get justice for over 5 years for corruption at Tarrant County Sheriff's Department. And I basically was assaulted. And when I called, I was on 911. And when the deputy got there, he just took me away. He took the side of the man who assaulted me. And he told me he didn't like my attitude. And when I told him, you know, how could you show that show my sons that I'm calling 911? You know, the man who assaulted me was my mother-in-law's boyfriend, just not relation to me or my husband or my family. And you think, you know, you call 911 and you're scared. You see the lights shine up. And I know that sometimes the lights shining up scare people too, obviously. But I guess in my own life, I had been working downtown Fort Worth, and I'd always had the cops to call whenever, like, someone got drunk or someone was, you know, like, I had known my own friend was a detective, and I just had better experiences, and it was shocking to me, and that's my privilege, and I never saw that calling 911 could be that I would be assaulted. I thought that I would be protected from a man assaulting me. And I just assumed that. I watched all of the shows on TV. Like, you just assume that if you're being assaulted and you call 911 that they're going to protect you. And then when they don't, when they tell you they don't like your attitude and they're also a man who you can tell instantly assaults women. And there's a huge problem with hiring police officers with domestic violence in their charts where they hurt their own wives. Mm-hmm. So if we're calling police to try to get help in a domestic violence and they show up and they want the woman, they don't like women and they have some kind of chip on their shoulder for women and you're crying and they don't like you because you're crying and they don't like, they're yelling at you, you know? It's just frightening because the power they have. The man took me on a hold and put me in a psych ward where it was terrifying. The psych where they took me, one of the places was closed down for the crimes that were, I saw so much horror. I mean, people were treated less than animals in a psych ward that I was at. And it's just terrible. You get, you call 911 because you're scared, and then suddenly you're stuck somewhere for 6 days scared. and I am an activist. I march with the women and the minorities and the disabled and the LGBTQ, and I'm also a descendant of the French indigenous, and my grandpa was called subhuman, and people taught that he was subhuman. And so I've always, my whole life, tried to fight that with peaceful protest, and I've never, ever made a violent threat on anyone. And they held me involuntarily, and they brought in police. They wouldn't let me have a lawyer, and they sat me down, and they interrogated me, and they asked me if I was planning on taking out Trump, which is insane. I don't own a gun. I'm nonviolent. They asked me if I was planning on bringing down the FBI, which is insane. I'm a history teacher. I graduated from UNT to teach American history, but I want to teach all of American history. And so right now we're witnessing people banning the books that I was taught to teach. So we're up against a rising white nationalism that's frightening and unprecedented.
Let me ask you,
ma'am, what was the final result?
What happened?
Well, basically, they sent out CPS while I was, and they took my children and placed my children with the man who assaulted me. And then they had my children for 5 months. They appointed an attorney to my case that told me if I fought that they would hold my children longer. I did everything they said to do, and then I got my children back, and I've been with a retired police officer and a retired veteran who are PTSD therapists for years. And just now, after years, I've had to where I'm brave enough to even try to get justice without fear of retaliation. And I did before they took my children. Whenever I got out of the psych ward, I was so mad and I felt empowered. And like, I called Tarrant County. I told them everything about Dumit. I told them everything about JPS and about Sundance Behavioral. I told them about Nate Savage with CPS. I told them how corrupted everybody was. And I was naive because I really thought that they were going to just take my side and, like, fire all these people and I was going to get justice. Nobody was going to mess with my kids. But they retaliated and they just came in at midnight and took my children. And my children have disabilities from the trauma of being taken, kidnapped basically, and held for a week involuntarily, like in an undisclosed location, taken and placed with the man who assaulted me. They saw that man assault me. That man also hit them. We've had no justice. Nobody has ever cared.
So let me ask you, because we got to catch the next caller. So did you get any type of resolution from this at all to this point?
I finally went up to the city council meeting. That was the first time I've called the Tarrant County Sheriff's Department over and over for years after I went up recently to Sergeant Shelton, told me that they threw out the evidence, that they don't. I told him about how nobody ever talked to my neighbor who witnessed me get assaulted and witnessed Deputy Dumit abuse me, and nobody talked to her. Like, nobody who, when I first called to get an internal investigation, when it first happened, nobody talked to her. The CPS guy didn't talk to her. Like, no one would talk to my own witnesses, so I couldn't even have my own witnesses. They just made their own narrative, and they talked to people who abused me to be the main witnesses.
Well, I got to
And I could
caller.
Tell that they, yeah.
I got to take the next caller, but right. tell me this. The officer did get fired, right? But it wasn't because of your case.
I don't know. They told me, like, I should be happy. They were like, well, he's not here anymore. So that should make it, like, it's very kind of belittling to be told that that's enough, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow.
I got fired for being late before.
Right, exactly. You know, but
you
can get away with a whole lot more. Well, thank you for calling in tonight.
All right. Thanks a lot. Bye, guys.
Thank you. Okay, next caller is, my boards are moving, 214-808. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Forward. 214-808.
Yes. Carrie?
Good evening. Yes.
Yeah, it's Reggie Ruffin.
Hey, Reggie, how are you?
Doing all right. It's like, you know, as they say, it's always work. Just sometimes you don't have to look hard for it. But I've been following a couple of the callers you was talking to just recently, and yeah, I kind of feel a lot of I feel a lot of that frustration all the time, because it seems like when you call in to the police, it's almost like you're calling them in on yourself.
Somebody's got some noise in their background that's distracting. Who's got the noise?
Well, that's not my background.
Okay, whoever's got the noise in the background, we can hear
paper
you.
Paper or something.
Okay, go ahead, Reggie.
Well, yeah, like I was saying, it just seems that, you know, sometimes when you call the police, you're actually calling the police on yourself. You're trying to report the crime, and then you become the crime.
Right.
And a lot of that really just depends on who the cop is, what their background and what their, you know, what are they feeling about things. And when you try to convey these things, you know, and you get mishandled about it, then when you complain about it, and talk about what happened, because I mean, I remember the next door neighbor that was threatening my stepfather, and you know, was talking about cracking him upside the head, talking about you gonna kill him and everything. Then when I call the police, they don't even take down the names of anybody involved. They just fill out a report and say suspect A, person B, things like that. And they do all that because they do not want to leave a list of names of whoever it is that you're calling in on or whoever you're talking about. Then later on, they come back. Then they'll start insinuating maybe you was the one that was the suspect and not the person that was being being victimized. But well, you know as well as you know all the troubles I've gone through that I'm still dealing with. You know, because after I called the police about the neighbors threatening my stepfather, and then eventually he even got caught himself getting in my mother's face. So I almost had to take it to the next level. So after that, I bought me a gun, and I bought Kevlar, and I just like I said, the next time this man threatens my family, anybody like that, I'm gonna put a bullet in him and leave him out on the corner for the trash to pick up. Because they always seem like they want you to do something so that you get in trouble, as opposed to they always say, well, why don't you call the police when you have a problem? Okay, I do that, but then what? I get my car stolen. I get threats from the cops. I get people shooting at me when I'm at bus stops. So it's like, you know, when does it end? And ever since I've become a civil rights activist, yeah, it seems like I've been catching more of the smoke from the opposite side. I should not have to get to the point where I have to feel like I have to be afraid of the police. I mean, I think I speak for a whole lot of people. What were you about to say?
Absolutely. And it really feels that way sometimes, that, you know, you feel like when you call them that you're putting yourself in danger. Because you don't know basically what to expect from them anymore. It's not like you feel that they're protecting and serving anymore. It feels like they're on something else right now.
Exactly.
Let me interject real quick. This red bull.
Okay.
May I hand you something? Okay, yeah. May I hand you something real quick? I've been in that position where I felt like I was a civil rights activist. And I learned very fast that using the word activist is like saying I'm a terrorist, because that means you're going against the status quo or what they call legalese policies and things like that. They no longer work under the law. The law is non-existent. A lot of people say, I know my rights because I know the law. They don't work under the law. That's why they got codes, policies. You follow what I'm saying? So this is where we get everything misconstrued. I just want to hand you a word. Why can you use a more euphemistic word, say, I am active, not an activist? Because activist to them is a bad word. So I just want to hand that to you. I'm a word connoisseur, and I study words, and words talk to me, And I know that word usage have put us in a bind. That's why they always say white men speak with forked tongue, meaning that the same word has two different meanings. One meaning will protect you. The other meaning will hurt you. So you have to understand which meaning is being said. An activist hurts you, and you have expressed that. You understand what you just said?
Well, okay. Thank you for that observation. But whether I say activist, whether I say humanist, whether I say human rights associates, it seems really it doesn't matter what you say. But when you start speaking out against the tyranny of this dystopian society that we have, they're going to take it. They're going to take it however they want to take it. But what they're going to do after that, you'll be the target. So, I mean, I could be very careful with my words. But guess what? At the end of the day, when they see me, they know who I am. And nothing on that level is going to change. And, you know, when I go down there, I even talk about some of the good things police does. Unfortunately, it don't seem to be that much. And that's the part that we have to stay focused on it, is that, you know, no matter how you want to try to categorize who I am as where it compares to them, at the end of the day, I'm still a human being. And until the day they treat me with one like one and treat me with equal rights like one, I will continue being an activist, whether it's for the community or the Commonwealth or however you want to put it. But nothing's going to never change the hubris they're doing. I mean, until we some way, somehow, figure out a way to stay focused and handle these problems accordingly.
I agree. Let me say this before we take the next caller, Reggie. I think there's safety in numbers, y'all. And I was telling somebody in a group on Facebook the other day, I think we, whether we call ourselves activists or not, that we need to know who each other are. We need to share stories. We need to share phone numbers. And we absolutely need to meet up from time to time to discuss what's going on in our communities. And I think that's the only way that we can fight back is knowledge is power, and the fact that we know each other and we know how to call on each other when we need each other. So FYI, anybody who's an activist, whether you call yourself one or not, reach out to me on Facebook, on the show, or email. My email is letstalkfortworth@aol.com. But I absolutely want to know who you are, and I want you to know who I am. But thank you for calling tonight, Reggie.
All right. Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to go.
Let me interject something right.
Sure.
Let me interject something right quick. Can you hear me? Because you know, I went and fought for the George Floyd Act. Very good bill. Make sure that you read it. But I went to Austin and I lobbied for the George Floyd Act. And one of the things in there was a thing called qualified immunity. I heard it spoken about here tonight. And let's explain what qualified immunity is when they do something, they are protected. They're saying that, oh, it's my job. As far as, let's say that the doctor may have a malpractice, but because he's a doctor and you sign your rights away saying if anything happened, then he's not reprimanded because of that. This is what qualified immunity is somewhat like. It's saying that we're just doing our job to the best of our ability. And this is why they said, oh, I thought he had a gun. That's to the best of his ability. So, again, when I was looking down there, and we had some horrific, oh my, when I tell you horrific stories, man, listen, it is unbelievable. Some of the stories were heart-wrenching, and it hurt me to my heart. But anyway, one of the things that I was saying is that maybe it's because of qualified immunity, the way that they act, the way that they do, because they know there's no recourse, no pushback, no punishment for that which they do, even if it's deadly force. So again, until we start dealing with the laws and policies, nothing is going to change, people. This is why it's imperative that we become involved with with politics and start mm-hmm. changing some laws, become more aware of what's going on in our communities and more in our city, in our state, in our world, because we are the ones that can only make the difference. Nobody else is going to, and nobody else will, until we do that which is needs to be done. And you're right, Carrie, we must band together. We must mm-hmm. do our due diligence and making sure that everyone is protected
yep.
by each other. So again, and I digress with that. Go ahead with the caller.
Thank you. Okay, caller, we're going to come to 469 next, right after this ad.
It's a great day at River Tree Academy. We are a private Christian school in the Lake Como community that strives to provide an environment where students can learn well, love well, work well, and lead well. We still have openings available for incoming 3rd through 5th grade students to enroll. Visit us on the web at rivertreeacademy.org to find out more and enroll today.
All right, we're going to 469-951. Good evening, you're on Let's Talk Fort Worth. 469-951.
Hi, I'm Layla Talley, and I'm an activist for the opt-out program for the smart water meters that are being forcibly installed. And what mm-hmm. the city of Fort Worth is doing now is they're using the police officers to ensure forcibly installed smart water meters to homeowners mm-hmm. who say no to the smart meter. So Steve Zavala, he's a tech at the water department, and he's the one who forcibly installed it. And so he informed me that several homeowners have been escorted by the police because they've gotten aggressive when they did not want the smart water meter installed. And then he was telling me that several homeowners want to do a lawsuit. And I've been trying to find these homeowners because we need to band together. And what happened to me was, this was like past May, you know, May 20th, mm-hmm. Steve Zavala came by, and my husband and I calmly said no to the smart meter install, and then he called the police on us, and so Officer Reynolds, Officer Armanda, and Officer B.J. Nays came, and I explained to them as soon as they arrived that we are sensitive to radiation and that our son, youngest son, stutters and stammers when he's in, you know, thick electrosmog, basically, and this is going to really harm his health and harm our health, the radiation that emits from the antenna unit that is with the water meter. And Officer Reynolds, at first, he chuckled and shook his head and smiling and didn't seem to care. And then Armanda had no reaction the whole time, didn't say a word. And then BJ Nays, she physically stood stern between us and the installer to make sure that we wouldn't physically try and stop him from putting the smart meter in. And she was talking to us about, this is their property. Don't come anywhere near their property, you know. And then she would not even look at me when I was trying to talk to her. Like, the only time she looked at me was when I was asking her name. After the smart meter was all installed, then Reynolds, you know, I guess decided to be somewhat nice. And he was like, oh, why don't you just, you know, order your own analog meter and have somebody put that in. And I was like, well, the water department says this is their property, so that's not possible, you know. So this whole event was just total PTSD, came to this crescendo. And, of course, all of us in this family were radiation sensitive, so we've had, like, chronic headaches. We've had brain fog. My son did start stuttering and stammering a whole lot more to a point where he struggles to get through a sentence sometimes. Our kids have sleep disturbances and everything. It just goes on and on and on. There's more and more symptoms. And so, it's just really frustrating.
Well, let me ask you this. So you're absolutely certain that all of these symptoms are connected to the water meter. And so you're saying that there is no recourse to stop them from going in, and if you do try to stop them, that the Fort Worth Police Department is going to intervene.
Yeah, that's what Steve Zalval was telling me. He said that if we happen to get aggressive or physically touch him, you know, during this forced install, that the police will escort us to jail.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they have done that with other homeowners. They've done it with other homeowners. And I've been trying to find those other homeowners because they need to join our group. And
wow.
This. I'm
glad you told us about that. Have you spoken with the police department about that at all and asked them if it's their job to intervene with a situation like that?
I didn't know to ask that question. I was just listening to it. And when Steve Saval was telling me this, he was so nonchalant, like it didn't even matter. Like he was, you know, telling about how he took a dog for a walk or something. Like it didn't even matter to him, you know? It's just sickening. Like, it's just another day at work. Oh, yeah, we sent some homeowners to jail because they didn't want their smart meter, you know?
Wow. Well, thank you for calling tonight and informing us. And if anybody basically has any information about anybody who's been arrested or connected with the smart meter, if you would reach out to me, I will definitely get you in touch with Tally about how you all can get involved with the lawsuit concerning this. Thank you, Tally, for calling in tonight.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Listen, you know, talking about bad police officers, the Aaron Dean trial, you know, the topic tonight is why does the city support bad police officers? We have seen so many delays. We've seen a recusal of a judge. We've seen vacation requests. We've seen, you know, statements about the attorney sick, even though there's three or four other attorneys. I mean, it's just one delay after another. So, Attorney Reed, the last time you were here, you told me you didn't even think the recusal was going to go through. Are you surprised by what's going on with this case? Did I lose Attorney Reed?
No, okay. I'm still here. I didn't think that Judge Gallagher would be able, one, I still don't think that the basis of the recusal was, I wouldn't have done it, you know, based on what he said, because it's my opinion that he had been giving the defense team everything that they had basically asked for up to that point regarding discovery and things of that nature. So he had shown that he was being impartial. However, what happened on June the 6th, whatever happened in the courtroom at that hearing, I was not privy to. I wasn't at that one, but that was the day that everything apparently kind of went off the charts. And so so that may have been the you know, the biggest issue, and I don't know what happened that day. But other than that, other than outside of what happened on June the 3rd at that hearing, I don't think that was a good basis for a recusal. That being said, when the court shut down because of COVID, all of the court shut down, and there were a lot of people who stayed locked in jail because Governor Abbott put in an order about people who were even accused of violent crimes not being able to get out on bond and so on. And so it has been a longstanding rule that people in custody, their trials come before people who are not in custody. And so in this instance, when you have, because people in custody could be innocent, a jury could find those folks not guilty, and the longer they have their freedom infringed upon, you know, the greater the harm to them. And so people in custody have a precedence for trial over people who are out on bond. Now, and then attorneys take cases all over the place, and we have to put in vacation letters because I'm a walking business. If I want to put in a vacation letter to go to a TCU game in November, so I can file a vacation letter, and the courts will generally honor it because they know that attorneys need breaks too. Now, but in this case, the judges, Jim Lane was initially hired as the primary attorney. The POA had been using him for a long time. He's not in the best health, so he hired some co-counsel to work with him and Miles Brissett and Bob Gill. So they are very well capable of going forward without Jim. But if Jim had said, hey, I want to be there, and he's the primary counsel, well, then most judges would give him a shot at trying to be there at least one time. And in that instance, that's what Judge Hagerman said. He's like, look, okay, I'll give you, you know, one continuous based on his health, but after that, you two are fully capable of going to trial on this matter. Now, right now, Judge Gallagher, at his hearing prior to the recusal, Judge Gallagher had indicated that he's going to set a scheduling order, and both the state, the DA's office has maintained we've been ready to go. Judge, if you say batter up, you know, we're ready to rock.
Mm-hmm.
But Gill, they have cases. They have a capital murder trial out of Johnson County. Now you got and that person's in custody, and now you got counties competing for calendar time. And if they're set down there and they're already set with a court date, that judge isn't going to give up his court date in Johnson County to appease a Fort Worth court. And so so they're going to sit down at some point, and I anticipate that it will be before the end of the month that Judge Gallagher is going to call everybody in and say, give me your calendars for the next 6 months and let me see what's going on, because once he sets a scheduling order, that's going to be it. When that scheduling order is set, it's going to be specially set, and it's going to be a hard date. And so I'm going to see if I can creep into court and kind of feel around and ask around as to when Judge Gallagher is looking at doing a scheduling order, to see if I can just find out some info since I'm down there every day. And maybe the next time we talk, if it hasn't happened yet, I can give you a little bit of insight on when to expect the scheduling order. But because COVID threw everything off.
Do you expect a trial this year?
Right now, we're at the beginning of August, September, October, November. It really depends on the capital murder trial in Johnson County, because people get their witnesses and their expert witnesses lined up. There may be a window, and I'm thinking that they're gonna want at least 2 weeks. For this trial, maybe three, but at least 2 weeks, which is still a long trial in Tarrant County terms. We do murder trials in Tarrant County under a week, you know. Wow. But Gill and Brissett, very thorough, very anal, and the witness list was 150 people or something like that, you know, and so. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, looking for a three-week window, that may be hard in August, and they probably have vacation letters in for November and December, but the judge can still kind of override some stuff. But if not, it's not going to get beyond the first quarter of 23.
Really? All right. We shall see. Y'all, we're going back to the phone line, 4-4-8-1-7-4-4-6. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Is that me, Carrie? Bob,
that
Bobby?
Would be you.
Okay. Hey, how's it going? Enjoying your show tonight. There's one question I want to ask earlier about the guy that was shot in the back 8 times, whatever, the officer that did that. Not trying to take up for anything like that, but has anybody got a chance to see what his past record like? Did he have a history of anything? It kind of goes to the theory, I think we're putting officers out in untrained, you know, not enough. We're understaffed. They're getting thrown out there in a lot of accidents. I'm not protecting the officer in no way. I'm saying that. I just wonder if anybody looked at his background to see if he had a history of any mistakes or not. The other thing I was going to hear on our agenda coming up, we have It's an MC-220581, and it's something about getting a grant from the United States Department of Justice in an amount of $2.5 million for the proposal to hiring of 20 patrol officers. Okay, and it says if awarded on here too. So one thing, it's got to be awarded to us, okay, to hire 20 officers. I don't understand this. Our tax dollars that we pay in, we should be well staffed, and I think the reason why we're not because we're paying $7 million to go into a golf course, or we're paying several hundred thousand dollars for them to go to Europe or to Italy to look for a soccer team. So, and also, you know, our money's being wasted downtown big times. The way I said, I don't think we should have to get a grant. And 20 officers, I think, what I understood from one officer told me the other day, and he says that we hired our officers on the scale of what it was 10 years ago. But we've grown a lot since then. It's not the same. So we're about like 1,000 officers understaffed, and I can believe that when you drive down the highway. So, and it kind of goes back to the first thing I'm talking about, not trying to protect any officer or anything, because there is a lot of bad ones out there, no doubt about that. But I think there's some out there that are being thrown out there not trained because we're so understaffed that they don't have time to have a person work with them long enough, 3 years in the field, to not make such quick judgment calls. You know, so that's my point is, and if that's happening, you know, I think that'd be a good thing to. And one more thing real quick. On the back side of this, we talked about the oversight monitor and that. My belief, too, is if you have a good mayor and a city manager first, I'd like to see a lot of these departments stripped down, get them out. If you have a good mayor and manager, then you'll have a good police chief officer. And if you have a good chief police, he will fire bad officers. This won't be an issue. They'll be removed when you have a good manager. And no one mentions the manager. You know, we get to the assistant manager or whatever, but he stays hidden one step back. So that's where the cancer is, in my book, is in Fort Worth would be David Cook and our mayor, Matty Parker. And if we had two good people there, I sure would like to see what would happen from there, because I think a lot of this stuff, these cities way back didn't have police monitors or oversight. They didn't need them because they had the right people in office. I think, and that would save us a lot of money, not having these overpaid people and everything. Okay, well, I appreciate you taking my call, Carrie, and I better change the decaf copy. And one more thing, our public commentation on October the 4th is going to be canceled for Texas Night Out, which I think our councilmembers get too much time to party as it is, so I'm against that. But so anyway, anybody gets a chance to look at the agenda for city council, it'd be good to explore that. So appreciate it, and enjoying the show, okay?
Thank you.
Thanks for taking my call.
Carrie, if I may address a couple of the things really quickly, I want to give anybody else an opportunity. But one of the organizations that I founded, Walk for Reform, which is a group of lawyers, primarily criminal defense attorneys, who laid out our agenda for when I walked to Austin to meet with the governor. One of the things that different police chiefs with whom I've spoken, because we speak to people. We're evidence-based science. We're not just pulling stuff out of a dark place that doesn't smell so good. So one of the things that the police chiefs kept letting us know that frustrated them is what they call zombie cops. They say, Leon, we try to fire people. I've had officers who I know have lied in court. I tried to fire him. When I fired him, the arbitrator, everything went to arbitration because of the police officers union, and the arbitrator trying to stay in everybody's favor or go right down the line just gives them a suspension. Here I am. I've tried to fire them, and 4 months later, that same officer smiling in my face because he's still wearing a badge under my name that I don't want him in. So firing a police officer isn't something that's easy to do because of the police officer associations. We've given them way too much authority and way too much power. Some cities go by Chapter 143 of the local government code. Other ones opt for meet and confer and collective bargaining, and those are the municipalities that are harder to get information from about police officers. And those are the municipalities that find it more difficult for police chiefs to fire officers. With respect to Hugo Barron and the training has always been something that the public should always focus on.
and mm-hmm. not just training, but the right person. In our research, we found that you could have Captain America go to the police academy, and at the police academy, it's us against the a-holes. And guess who the a-holes are? The citizens. Hmm. And either you're with us or you're with them. And and then the philosophy of policing by department. Some of them use warrior style, meaning we're going to go out, we're going to fight crime. You know, we're predators. Well, if you're a predator, that makes me prey. And I don't like being prey. And that becomes this. You got different philosophies behind policing, guardianship, guardian style, warrior style, you know, various styles that are employed by officers and various philosophies. And so when it comes to training, in an instance like what happened with David Colley when he was shot by Hugo Barron, the officer next to him is given a tell. The female officer saw no threat to the degree that she had to pull a weapon and shoot him. But the male officer on the police department powerlifting team ran up on, and I sent you the video, and in the first 36 seconds, everything is played out right there in 36 seconds. That man, basically, if they didn't kill him that night, but they certainly killed his spirit, because they killed his body. They didn't kill his body, but they killed his spirit that night, and his body followed, you know, at the age of 38. So had he, training is always something that the public should expect. We should expect the best trained officers, but we don't need you training in weapons and tactics. We need you training in conflict resolution and de-escalation. And if you look with the city of Fort Worth, I filed a public information request. How many hours do you spend with weapons and tactics versus conflict resolution and de-escalation? It was like 116 hours spent on weapons and tactics and 8 hours on conflict resolution and de-escalation. So what mindset do you think a patrol officer is going to take to the street?
Oh, wow.
One thing I can add to this, I've seen those classes, and it literally, I went to a cultural sensitivity class given to policemen, and from the instructor down to the last officers, it was considered nothing more than a waste of time, a joke, and something that the state was forcing them to do that they had no intention of using and didn't need. No one took the class seriously. It was just kind of like a smirk. And a chagrin that they had to sit there for 8 hours and talk about cultural sensitivity.
Oh, wow.
May I interject right here?
Sure.
Our problem is we expect for them to do for us again. My thing is I had come up with this thing, and I talked to a few of the officers and stuff about this. It's called law-abiding citizen. Law-abiding citizens is one that go to class and learn about the way that they're supposed to treat you when they approach you and what have you. In other words, we go to class with the officers so that they know when they start beginning the excessive force, and we know when they start excessive force so that we can have an understanding and so that they can stand their grounds and we stand ours as well. Until we get an understanding or we get a certain level of understanding, we're going to have problems. Again, I came up with law-abiding citizens. A law-abiding citizen is one that take a class and know and understand what they're supposed to do when approached by an officer. And when an officer approaches that person, they know what they're supposed to do. So now we don't have the conflict because we know and understand what we're supposed to do. Again, until we start doing those type of things, yeah, they're going to laugh at the classes and what have you because it don't mean nothing to them. But when you more or less know what your rights are or what your so-called rights are, and you start saying, hey, man, no, that's excessive force, and you call them to action, and we make sure that they have on their, hey, do you have your camera on? When you know what they're supposed to do and they're not doing it, then now you're in control. I don't let them control me. I tell them what I want to be done, and I have plenty of incidents where I've I've approached them and let them know, no, you can't do that person like that. And, you know, get them off the ground, get them out your car, or if they're under arrest, or what's going on here, because I'm a concerned citizen. Not only that, until we start being concerned citizens with all of our people, they're going to continue to hit us individually. So, again, we must do something different. I hear a lot about what the officers are doing, but what are we doing? Again, when we have a powerhouse, like I tell them, hey, my people have guns too. I want you to know and understand that when you call your people, I'm calling mine as well. When we start making, we can't change their habits, but we can change their ways. And we must do that in order for us to have some type of freedom of not being scared of our own environment.
All right, let me add to that. This Red Bull, yes. I just want to give everybody an imagery. Now, what if the last caller was speaking about the police force not having enough policemen on the force? Now, I'm going to give an imagery. What if every policeman had military gear on, the green military gear, and every police car was a tank? If they was riding around in Fort Worth, we would automatically think that we're about to be attacked. There's a war going on. We would automatically think that. Well, in all innocence, that is what's happening in our neighborhood. The young man that just called on the call, and when police are added to the force, those police will protect his neighborhood. They terrify our neighborhood. So, us asking for more police presence, that right there is shooting ourselves in the foot, and that's just not a play on words. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I would just bring that imagery of what if everything was military, if they took the black off or whatever, the blue off, and everything was green. How would you feel? How comfortable would you feel? And not, you won't look at it them as them protecting you. Look at as if there's an outside force about to come in. You follow me? So we're in a war zone. That's what's happening in our mind. I'll digress.
Yeah, I don't know what part of Fort Worth Bob is in, but Bob, you know, it's unfortunate, man, that when a traffic stop calls for three police cars, if not four, in my neighborhood, it's unfortunate when I call the police or someone call the police when they need some assistance. It take them hours to get there. So I don't know how many more we need to rectify that problem. I don't know how many we need. I'm going down Miller Avenue. A police car parked in the middle of the median. How intimidating is that? I had to stop beside him and look at it. And it's a wonder he didn't pull me over. And I wish he would have, because I would have addressed that within itself. Now, we don't need more. We just need better. So, again, I don't know where the money's coming from, but if they get here, I believe they need to get it to these scared citizens that need to go and get an understanding about what policing is, understanding about what laws are, understanding what excessive force is. Well, I don't even call it excessive force. It's deadly force now. For our citizens, it's deadly force, not excessive. It's deadly force. So until we start addressing that within, we don't need no more coming in.
And, yo, listen, before we get out of here, one thing we didn't talk about, and we already passed on, we didn't talk about the need for a civilian review board. That's absolutely needed. And I say that because we have in place right now, as a Band-Aid, the Office of the Police Oversight Monitor. Basically, I don't know if anybody pays attention to what their function is, but basically they, in their own brochure, says that their function is to oversight, is basically for oversight and accountability. Intake complaints and commendations, monitor contact, complaint investigations, policing practices, review policies and procedures, research, benchmark, and make recommendations, auditing, mediation, community engagement, data collection and analysis, and periodic reporting. Well, in a nutshell, that means they have no subpoena power, no authority to make the officer come and talk to them, no, ability to tell IED what to do or how to do it. So literally all they do is write policy and procedure. So do you all agree that an oversight, basically not an oversight, but a citizens review board is absolutely needed to fix the problems that we have in the city?
Absolutely, and we still need a consent decree. The history of Fort Worth, and I've said this before, it's not my history, it's their history. It has their longhorn on it. Since we've been collecting racial profiling data in 2002, 20 years ago, without exception, without fail, there has not been a year when African Americans and other minorities have not been over-policed. That is a record that speaks for itself. And now if you go through our neighborhoods, you'll see them putting up police spy cameras and license plate reading cameras throughout our neighborhoods and our communities. And as pretty as you are, Carrie, the longer I look at you, the more flaws I'm going to find. And it's the same with our communities. The more you look at us and spy on us, the more things you're going to find wrong. But we absolutely need civilian oversight. And like the police officers will tell us, if you ain't doing nothing wrong, why come I can't look?
Amen. Now, that's the truth. Mr. Lewis, right. You agree we need a civilian review board?
I do not. I want to see a hiring committee and cut these wolves off before they get a badge and a uniform, not review what they did after we've given them authority. I want to see a hiring committee put in place that will weed these people out.
Ooh, that's a thought. Red Bull.
I would say do both.
Do both.
That's agreeable.
Yeah, this Red Bull. And yes, I do. I advocate for that. I do advocate for the watchmen to be watched. That was on Good Times a long time ago when Wilona was used to watch the watchman. I mean, she was the watchman to watch people stealing. Yeah. And she felt as if she was violated. But in all reality, there was no violation because everybody is suspect. In other words, whenever the police pull you over, you are a law breaker. Well, we need to start looking at them as bad cops. If we view them the way they view us, then we have no problem. Just because it's just like a pit bulldog. I look at a pit bulldog as a biter. Mm-hmm. Every pit bulldog, I don't care if they're just born. I look at them as biters. Sooner or later, they're going to bite. So that's the way I view that. That's the way we should view the police, as sooner or later, just because, you know, if you hang around, man, if you hang around a thief long enough, the spirit of theft is going to impede upon you. Even if you don't do nothing but start protecting what you got, you still got that spirit that's hunting you. So I agree.
Antonio Swin, before we get out of here, we need a civilian review board.
Anything to shed some light on some wrong, I'm all for. But again, I mean, we don't have subpoena power. How much, if you point the finger and can't do nothing about it, if you see the hurt and can't heal it, then really, what is it for? So, again, I mean, my thing is it's to and fro. I don't know what it's really about. And not only that, how much are y'all leaning on the citizens? How much you are also being trained by them as not the education, you know what I'm saying? I got the rule.
rules. So again, I don't know. I gotta delve into it and see and learn more about it. But if there's no power in anything, then what is it for?
All right. Listen, if you need a criminal attorney, Attorney Reed, how do they reach out to you?
Yeah, we're listening. I'm still here. I just mute whenever I'm not being spoken with, but I'm sorry. I'm simple. It's two numbers and a name, 737 Leon. 73, if you forget the third number, go back to the 7. 737 Leon. Thank you, Carrie.
Okay, thank you. Listen, thank you to all my guests tonight, Attorney Leon Reed, Anthony the Twin Harris, Red Bull, Frederick Lewis. Thank you all for being with me tonight. Thank you, the audience, for listening. Listen, tell a friend, tell a neighbor about this show. We're here each and every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. We ask that you advertise or sponsor the show. Reach out to me at letstalkfortworth@aol.com. That's letstalkfortworth@aol.com. We will work with your budget, whatever we need to do to make it work, we'll make it happen. Also, listen, if you have an idea for a show, drop me a line at letstalkfortworth@aol.com. That's letstalkfortworth@aol.com. If you have an idea for a show that you think is in line with what we typically do here, drop me a line. Again, at letstalkfortworth@aol.com. And I mentioned earlier, if you're an activist, listen, we all need to know each other. So definitely reach out to me at that same email. And a last thing I'm going to say tonight is we all need our own Axon cameras. It's getting serious out here. And as they're watching us, we need to be watching them. All right, y'all, listen, we got to get out of here, but we do this each and every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.